Friday, 5 p.m. Already, it's another weekend. Isn't this awesome? I love summer. I'm so glad you tuned in. Thank you for joining us. It is time for American Hit Network on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host for the next hour as we kick this weekend off. My name is Tom Ryan, and with me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, to do the same thing with me.
Yes, indeed.
Told you. All right, now this is rather interesting because we've been covering the Great American Songbook for quite a while now. In fact, this is part 22, and we are right now just about entering the mid-40s, and it's really... The reason it's interesting is I don't know if people who listen to my Friday show are the exact same people who listen to my Wednesday show, if they get to hear them both from time to time. But this is unusual in that we are very close to being in the same era for where we just were on Wednesday when we were playing selections from the Smithsonian Collection of Classic Jazz. There we were playing tracks of just after the war years, or basically after the strike ended. Here we are covering the Great American Songbook. And the era where we are is actually just before the strike began. So this serves as a really good example of what music was like before it changed into what we were just playing on Wednesday. It'll make for a really interesting juxtaposition. It's a bit backward because we were playing the latter years on Wednesday and the earlier years, but it's only about 2 years apart. And you're going to be shocked if you're a regular listener to hear just how much music really did change in those 2 short years. Now, the Great American Songbook always represented a cross between sophistication and popularity, but never more so than during the war years. The intensity of the times united people, especially in their desire to embrace something that could help them the escape from the trauma of the times. So the songs become a bit more patriotic, a bit sweeter. Holiday songs become a real big part of it. I'm even debating right now if I should be playing the Christmas songs because I realize it's July. I'm very aware of that. And I'm not sure which way
I'm going
to go.
Christmas in July.
Maybe it will be. We'll see. So things are a bit sweeter and a bit more simpler in form. And this is because of the war, I believe. But when the war ended and then the strike pretty much petered out, when music came back, it was a totally different animal. I know that when we think, like, oh, music changed so much in the 60s or in the fill in whatever decade is that where you grew up and you felt a lot of things changing. You think that things in the 40s tend to be samey. Well, this music is nothing at all remotely like what we just were playing on Wednesday. In fact, let's pick it up with what I'm talking about. The first track is the perfect example of a big band tune during the war years. It was a number one popular song written by Mack Gordon and Harry Warren, who we've covered last week. I think we played Mack Gordon 3 different times.
Right.
Songs like At Last, which nobody believes that he wrote, You'll Never Know, and that sort of thing. This track is the hit version, as performed by Glenn Miller and his orchestra. The song is called I've Got a Gal in Kalamazoo.
She's the toast
of Kalamazoo.
Years have gone by.
My, how she grew.
I liked her looks when I carried her books
in Kalamazoo.
I'm gonna send a wire, hopping on a flyer,
leaving today.
Am I dreaming? I can hear screaming.
Hiya, Mr. Jackson. Everything's okay. A-L-A-M-A-C-O. Oh, what a gal. A real pimperoo.
I'll make my bid for that freckle-faced kid I'm hurrying to.
I'm going to Michigan to see the sweetest girl
in Kalamazoo.
Glenn
that
Miller.
Was cute.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because... That's all right. It's funny because the lyrics are usually so incredibly sophisticated in the Great American Songbook, and there they allow themselves to get a little bit silly, especially with the opening, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I got a gal. But there you have it. I mean, that's pretty much a great example of what I mean by the weird juxtaposition between what music sounded like in 1943 compared to 1946, like we were playing on Wednesday. The war had a huge influence. Of course it did. The attack on Pearl Harbor is exactly what inspired this next song. It's written by Frank Lesser. I think this is the third time, Heidi, in 22 shows where I am saying that a song is written by one person. Up until this point in time.
Yeah, there's a lot of people sharing writing.
Everybody. I mean, across the board, nonstop. I would say, you know, so much, pretty much every song that we've played out of the 20, in this 22 song series so far was written by two men, or the very rare occasion where Dorothy Fields was the only woman so far, still, amazingly, one woman in the entire Great American Songbook. They're like, wow.
That kind of sad.
Creative. Yeah, it really is. But the only solo writers up until now were Irving Berlin and Cole Porter. And now you can add to that list Frank Lesser, because he was inspired by what had happened at Pearl Harbor to write a patriotic song. And he came up with this track called Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. We'll play the hit version, since that makes the most sense, by Kai Kaiser and his orchestra.
Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Praise
obviously an incredibly popular song in the armed forces during World War II here in the United States. Now, next track up is another song that was made popular by Glenn Miller. Glenn Miller, almost certainly the most popular band leader during World War II. But this is amazing. Believe it or not, already we have a repeat songwriter. This is, again, Mac Gordon and Harry Warren, who had written this song. Boy, they were busy at this point in time. Like I said, the track was a big hit for Glenn Miller and his orchestra, Ray Eberly. They had already recorded Moonlight Serenade, which is probably their theme song, another song called Sunrise Serenade that can be attributed to them. This song is entitled Serenade in Blue, but rather than having Glenn Miller and his orchestra perform it, since I've already heard from them, let's hear a version by Stan Getz. People pick up on Stan Getz because of the way that he's associated with the whole bossa nova thing, but you should really go deep on his catalog. I mean, there's a lot of amazing music, like the track we just heard, his version of Serenade in Blue. All right. This is also brings us back a little bit to what we were talking about last week, Heidi. You remember I was talking about, well, Johnny Mercer, the lyricist, working with Harold Arlen, and Johnny Mercer was in love with Judy Garland, and she was a big inspiration of him for a lot of his songs. That this song is another one of those. This is like the third in the two shows that he had written like exclusively with Judy Garland in mind as his muse.
Wow.
Right? And another coincidence is that the song, the first original hit version, was by the Glenn Miller Orchestra. So, you know, it's all this stuff very much of its time. The song is called That Old Black Magic. It was in a film called Star Spangled Rhythm. Gordon Jenkins recorded a version of it with his orchestra. Judy Garland herself recorded a version of it.
Huh.
He must have been so proud. I mentioned Glenn Miller, but the version that I remember most is from the 50s when Sammy Davis Jr. covered it. So I'm going to play that version for you.
That old black magic has me in its spell. That old black magic that you weave so well. I got those icy, icy fingers up and down my spine. The same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine. That same old tingle I feel inside. And then that elevator starts its ride. And down I go. All around I go. Like a leaf that's caught in a tide. Well, I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear your name, and I'm a flame. A flame with such a burning desire that only your kiss, 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 kiss can put out that fire. You're the lover I have waited for. You're the mate that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, darling, down and down I go. Round and round I go. Like a leaf that's caught in a tide. Well, I should stay away, but what can I do? I hear your name, and I'm a flame with such a burning desire that only your kiss put out that fire. You're the love, the love, the lover that I have waited for. The mate that fate had me created for. And every time your lips meet mine, baby, darling, down and down I go. Round and round and round I go. In a spin, ooh, and I'm loving that spin that I'm in. Ooh, under that old black magic car.
You're a dirty robber.
Oh, black magic car. Uh-oh, get out the car. Oh, black magic car.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Under that old black magic.
How outrageous is that version?
A little goofy.
Really goofy. But I mean, the first time I heard it, I remember it kind of shocked me. Because, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. is obviously a very talented man. But the thing is, a lot of his recordings, they didn't age as well as, say, obviously as not as well as Sinatra's, for
example.
Yeah,
they're a little campy, aren't they?
Yeah. But that one is, it's just such great fun. It's so over-the-top campy that that one manages to hold on just because it's so nuts. Well, all right. Heidi, you're not going to believe who wrote this next song.
Oh, boy.
Matt Gordon and Harry Warren. I mean, this is 3 out of 5, like every other song. I mean, it's just stunning to think how popular they were at this era and how creative they were coming up with these incredible songs throughout in the middle of the war years. This song is called There Will Never Be Another You. There are well-known versions of the song by so many people that it's ridiculous. I can't even name them all. I'll just give us a small example is Woody Herman and his orchestra, the Lionel Hampton Quintet, Lester Young with Oscar Peterson, Keeley Smith with Nelson Riddle, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Chris Montez had a hit with it, Andy Williams, Julie London, Tony Bennett.
The list goes on and on.
Right? I'm going to play a version of There Will Never Be Another You because I love to basically make the jazz connection between the Great American Songbook and the jazz players. Here's a version by Chet Baker.
Be standing here with someone new. There will be other songs to sing, another fall, another spring, but there will never be another you. There will be other lips that I may kiss, but they won't thrill me like yours used to do. Yes, I may dream a million dreams, but how can they come true if there will never, ever be another you? Yes, I may dream a million dreams, but how can they come true if there will never, ever be another you?
Chet Baker playing and singing There Will Never Be Another You. You know, we haven't heard from, I mean, because Mac Gordon and his song and his too busy hogging.
They're hogging all the limelight.
Exactly. Yeah, they're knocking out even some of the greats. We haven't played anything by Cole Porter, I feel, in about 2 or 3 weeks. So it's time to make up for that. He wrote this song in 1943 for a film called Something to Shout About. It's a song, again, that was recorded by a whole bunch of people. Of course, Frank Sinatra sang almost everything that's in the Great American Songbook.
did Ella Fitzgerald, but, you know.
Right. Well, there's a lot of jazz players who basically touched on this too, and some popular vocalists. I've actually got a version that I really enjoyed by Helen Merrill that I'd like to share with you. Her version of Cole Porter's You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To.
You'd be sang a lullaby, you'd be all that I could desire. Ah, understands, chilled by the winter, under an August moon, burning above. You'd be so nice, you'd be paradise to come home to and
Merrill is one of those artists, I think, that gets overlooked. I think people basically, you know, either forget about her entirely or put her away as like an old-fashioned singer. But her band is always great, and she's always understated in her performance, which makes it very easy to enjoy what she's doing. Very palatable artist. Her version of Cole Porter's You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To. Well, right here would be where I ought to be inserting two Christmas songs. And I, now that I'm here, I think I've made up my mind that I think it's a bad idea.
Okay.
I can talk about them.
Okay.
But I can move on because, I mean, it's the middle of July and a snowstorm in July. Just,
well, just turn on the AC.
I think there's still a lot of people. I think less people would complain about me playing, would complain about me not playing them than would complain if I did play them. But let me at least talk about them because they are part of the Great American Songbook and they were right from this era during the war. The first, there's something, I don't know, I've it's credited to two different lyricists, Ralph Brandani and or Kim Gannon. The composer is Walter Kent. The song is I'll Be Home for Christmas. It was a great World War II Christmas song because this was written from the point of view of a soldier who was overseas and couldn't come home to see his family. Very, very sad song. And it kept that perspective of being away and being unable to get back to your family, even after the war was over. And it's obviously a perennial and definitely a part of the Great American Songbook, even if it is certainly odd or if not flat out inappropriate to be playing it in July.
It's out of season.
The other song is written by Irving Berlin, which makes it very hard for me to not want to play it because Irving Berlin has, like Cole Porter, has emerged as the one of the most obvious superstars of the Great American Songbook. He has been with us since show number one. He was one of the first artists at the very beginning when we started this series in the year 1919. And now here we are in the mid-40s and he is still going strong. In fact, this song is one of the best-selling songs of all time. He wrote White Christmas. I don't know if people know that, but that was Irving Berlin. So if we do play them, it's accidental because they are on my playlist.
Well, I just skipped over those two.
But Bing Crosby had the hit version for both I'll Be Home for Christmas and White Christmas. White Christmas by far was the bestseller. I mean, Crosby's version is credited in selling over 50 million copies.
Wow.
Over time. If you add them all up, the record itself sold over 100 million copies. It was absolutely incredible and outrageous. So I'll probably start a trend by skipping other Christmas songs on future shows since we're going to be finishing up the series probably before the end of the summer.
We can cover them all at Christmas time.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. We'll probably be back and we can talk about it then. But they're from the Great American Songbook, I'll Be Home for Christmas and Berlin's White Christmas. Okay, so there's another change taking place here right now, Heidi. As if you remember, up until this point, whenever I mentioned the name Richard Rodgers, I would follow it by talking about his songwriting partner, Lawrence Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that we're going to lose Lawrence Hart pretty soon. And this is where it happens. Rodgers teamed up with Oscar Hammerstein II to write a musical in 1943. That became really one of the most famous musicals of all time. And the opening song from the musical definitely became one of the most popular American songs to come out of the war years. And it's called Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. The show was Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. It opened the show to just a huge smash success. And the version I'm going to play is a pretty cool hip version by Ray Charles performing with the Count Basie Orchestra.
There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. Happy bell. There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. The cone is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. I say, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yeah. Yes, what a wonderful day. Y'all look out there. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything going my way. standing
like statues. The cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eyes. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yeah. Well, what a wonderful day. I want y'all to know, I've got a beautiful feeling. I've got everything. And everything's going my way. Everything's going my way. Y'all do it to me now. Of the earth are like music. The breeze is as busy, it don't miss a tree. And a little old weeping willow is laughing at me. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yes, what a wonderful day. I got everything going my way, my way. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. I wanna thank you, little girl, for such a wonderful day.
How hip is that?
That was good.
Man, Ray Charles with the Count Basie Orchestra.
I'm so glad I got to see him in my lifetime.
Oh, I totally am so jealous. I remember the first year I went to New Orleans, there was a nighttime show where I could have seen Ray Charles outside, because he wasn't playing at the Jazz Fest, but there was a nighttime
event. Concert.
Right. But it was like a fundraiser thing in a ballroom. And it was like $200 a ticket. And this was 1989, when $200 to me was like, I could have bought a car with that much money. I felt, you know.
So, or at least a car payment.
Right. Well, I'm just, you know, I wish I did it. That's from the album Ray Sings, Basie Swings. All right. This is amazing. But yet again, I mean, the same songwriters keep popping up over and over again. In this instance, it's Harold Arlen and Johnny Mercer again. Did he write this one for Judy Garland? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. But he could have. This one writer referred to One for My Baby and One More for the Road as metropolitan melancholy with a little touch of booze on the side. And it's really pretty much a very adept description of what was going on. It's an immensely complicated song. I mean, the song by Harold Arlen, you know, usually songs like from the Great American Songbook might go beyond the normal 16 or 24 bars that you would hear. You know, they go up to 32. This song's got a 48 bars to it.
Wow.
It's what they call a tapeworm. Like a song that goes on and on and on before it resolves itself. And it also changes key. But Frank Sinatra hit on what the song was about pretty much better than anybody. And he knew it. I mean, he recorded the song, I'm aware of at least six versions. that Sinatra recorded in his lifetime. There's very well maybe more, but that's incredible. And it's definitely one of his showpiece tunes, something that he would be doing at his live shows for the last 20 years of his life. So I've got to play Frank Sinatra's version of Harold Arlen and Johnny Mercer's One for My Baby.
It's 2:45. There's no one in the place except you and me. So set 'em up, Joe. I got a little story you ought to know. We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Make it one for my baby and one more for the road. I got the routine, so drop another nickel in the machine. I'm feeling so bad, wish you'd make the music pretty and sad. Could tell you a lot, but you've got to be true to your code. So make it one for my baby, one more for the road. You'd never know it, but buddy, I'm a kind of poet, and I got a lot of things to say. And when I'm gloomy, you simply gotta listen to me till it's all talked away. Well, that's how it goes, and Joe, I know you're getting pretty anxious to close. So thanks for the cheer. I hope you didn't mind my bending your ear. This torch that I've found must be drowned, or it soon might explode. So make it one for my baby and one more for the road. That long, long road.
I opened that by saying I'm going to play Frank Sinatra's version, when I realized I should have said, oh, I'm going to play one of Frank Sinatra's versions. because that was one of his earlier recordings, certainly from like the Columbia years before he was signed to Capitol in the 50s. And already, like, shaking off the whole Frankie image, the Bobby Soxer thing, you can see that there's a little bit of change there already.
Yeah, he's going for the more blue-eyed soul.
Definitely, definitely. Sinatra, one of, like I said, one of his versions of One for My Baby. Now, we've already played a track from Oklahoma, when we played Oh What a Beautiful Morning, the Ray Charles and Count Basie version. Well, hope you don't mind if we go back there again, because actually we're going to go back there even once more before this today's show is over. this time the song is People Will Say We're in Love. It was the thing that set up the relationship between the two lead characters in Oklahoma, and certainly one of the most, again, popular songs. And I so dug Ray Charles' version of the thing that he did with Count Basie that I was impressed to find that I had a version of Ray Charles doing People Will Say We're in Love, but this time with Betty Carter. So I'm like, that's got to be cool. And I played it, and it was. So if you don't mind, I'd love to share it with you right now. Ray Charles with Betty Carter, this time performing People Will Say We're in Love.
don't throw bouquets at me. Don't please my folks too much. Don't laugh at my jokes too much. People will say,
don't sigh and gaze at me. Your sighs are so like mine. Your eyes mustn't glow like mine. People will say we're in love. They're suspecting things. People will say we're in love. Suspecting things, people will say we're in love.
Oh man, the diversity of Ray Charles. It's just absolutely something to behold. A fabulous version of People Will Say We're in Love from the musical Oklahoma. Okay, we're going to jump right to the next one because this next song is also from the musical Oklahoma. The song was obviously hugely popular in the show. It was made popular, though, as a jazz standard because it was covered by the piano player Ahmad Jamal. And he put out his version, and Miles Davis was a huge fan of Ahmad Jamal. And so Miles picked up the song based upon the fact that Ahmad Jamal did it. And because Miles did it, a ton of other jazz musicians eventually came around to playing their version of Surrey with the Fringe on Top. Now, the version that I'm going to play just this weekend, I mean, this is airing the week after the 4th of July holiday. And we were up in Massachusetts, Western Massachusetts, as we are often on the weekends, Heidi and I. And we are in the Berkshires, where we go. And up in the Berkshires, there's a few well-known artists that live in that area. Perhaps the most well-known is James Taylor, and he's certainly the most celebrated. They've pretty much the whole Berkshire County has adopted him as like the prodigal son that, oh my God, he's here. He's with us forever. And he played two sold out shows at Tanglewood, which is the summer home for the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And it's in a town called Lenox. And for James Taylor, I mean, to sell out two shows back to back in the same weekend is pretty remarkable, and I think a lot of it had to do with COVID, but I mean, James Taylor genuinely is that popular up there. I was afraid to go near the place. I was afraid that I wouldn't even be able to like get past the road that
that leads up to the place.
Right, on 183 to get into anywhere near Tanglewood. But I understand that things went quite well, and it is James Taylor who eventually sang a version of the song from Oklahoma that was performed as a jazz piece by Ahmad Jamal and then Miles Davis. And I think that James does a really good job of bringing back the original charm of the Oklahoma version. So here is James Taylor performing Surrey with the Fringe on top.
When I take you out tonight with me, honey, here's the way it's gonna be. You will sit behind a team of snow-white horses in the slickest gig you'll ever see. Chicks and ducks and geese better scurry when I take you out in the Surrey, when I take you out in the Surrey with the fringe on top. Watch that fringe and see how it flutters when I drive them high-stepping strutters. Nosy folks, they'll peek through the shutters and their eyes will pop. The wheels are yellow, the upholstery's brown, the dashboard's genuine leather. With eyes and glass curtains you can roll right down in case there's a change in the weather. Bright side lights winking and blinking, ain't no finer rig I'm a thinking. You can keep your rig if you're thinking, but I'd care to swap for that shiny little Surrey with the fringe on the top.
Now would you say that fringe was made of silk?
I wouldn't have no other kind but silk.
Has it really got a team of snow-white horses?
One's like snow, the other's more like milk. I can see the stars getting blurry when we ride back home in the Surrey, riding slowly home in the Surrey with the fringe on top. I can feel the day getting older, feel a sleepy head near my shoulder, nodding, drooping close to my shoulder till it falls kerplop. The sun is swimming on the rim of a hill, the moon is taking a header. And just when I'm thinking all the earth is still, a lark wakes up in the meadow. Hush, you bird, my baby's a-sleeping. Maybe got a dream worth a-keeping. Whoa, you team, just keep on a-creeping at a slow clip, clop. Don't you hurry, little Surrey, with a fringe on the top.
Man, I guess those were the days, huh? So romantically old-fashioned. Have you ever ridden in a carriage or a Surrey?
I've gone on a hayride with a horse-drawn wagon.
With the horse, you did? With the,
yeah.
I've never ridden in a wagon or a carriage or a Surrey, with or without a fringe. But that's an incredibly romantic song. Only got time for one more, Heidi. And I mean, this for the this is our 22nd show now dedicated to the Great American Songbook. And never before in the entire series have we ever featured the same songwriters more than three times. We're about to, because this next song is also written by Mack Gordon and Harry Warren. It's just...
They were on a roll.
Blows my mind how popular they were during the war years. And you'll know the song. It's called You'll Never Know. And the version I'm going to play for you is somebody that I don't think we've had sing for us yet in this series. So we'll end it with Johnny Mathis and his version of You'll Never Know. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We will be back with part 23.
Have a great weekend.
Next Friday. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You'll never know just how much I miss you. You'll never know just how much I care. And if I tried, I still couldn't hide my love for you. You ought to know, for haven't I told you so a million or more times? You went away and my heart went with you. I speak your name in my every prayer. If there is some other way to prove that I love you, I swear I don't know how. You'll never know if you don't. Tried, I still couldn't hide my love for you. You ought to know, for haven't I told you so? I speak your name in my ear.